so we get our insight on the Pats from the best that football world has to offer. And, yeah, we'll talk about the Giants, too. It's our NFL insider, Field Yates, with The Huddle on 101.3, The Game.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle, 101.3, The Game. Guys, right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, as he does every week, he's our ESPN NFL insider, thanks to the Automax Group. It's Field Yates. Field, right off the bat, final thoughts, final ideas or suggestions from that Kansas City Pats game.
You know, guys, I would just say this is that regardless of what team you root for, whether it was New England, Kansas City, or maybe somebody else, I do think that what Sunday was an extremely high-level sporting competition, not just football, right? I mean, there may have been more dramatic games that involved the New England Patriots, but I think start to finish, that might have been the highest-level game that we have seen in quite some time in the NFL. I just thought that there was magnificent play on both sides of the ball. I don't think that Sunday was about which team didn't do enough. I think it was about which team did just a little bit more. So really one that I don't think anybody who watched that game will forget anytime soon.
Field, I mean, Sony Michel dominant for a while, and then all of a sudden Rex Burkhead comes in at the end of the game. Why was Rex Burkhead in at the end of that game in your mind?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious is that when Sony Michel is on the field, you have an idea of what the Patriots are looking to do. It's to run the football. When James White is on the field, you have an idea that the Patriots are looking to probably throw the football. And Rex Burkhead is kind of the man in the middle. And I understand that people were frustrated early on in the game when they saw Burkhead on the field and no Sony Michel, and certainly Burkhead getting stuffed on fourth and short was something that probably had some people drawing some ire. But I think it's clear that a defense has to sort of account for Burkhead in a different way. And I thought that Sunday was a masterful performance by all involved with the Patriots in utilizing their players in the best way. When we discussed last week the idea of slowing down Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, all cop to the fact that Jonathan Jones never came up in my analysis. And yet, in the biggest game of the season, Jonathan Jones is playing incredible snaps for the Patriots and limiting Tyreek Hill to one catch in the AFC Championship game.
Field, what'd you make of Gronk getting back into the offense and getting back in a big way?
Yeah, I thought that the 100% snap count was the most important number for Gronk. And you know something, guys, if you talk to people that are close to the team, you know, I don't think there's ever been a feeling that Gronk totally lost everything or even necessarily came close to it. If you think Gronk is the same level of explosive as he was in previous years, I would disagree with you. I think there has probably been a gear that hasn't quite been reached this year for Gronk. But that doesn't mean that he's not still a dominant player, and perhaps the Patriots' best offensive player in this game this past Sunday, which sounds like a lot, but it might be true. The guy played every snap. He's moving people. He's moving people like mountains in the running game. And then the passing game, guys, think about the notable gotta-have situations in the overtime drive, and on two separate occasions in two incredibly different routes. The first time, Gronk on basically a go on the left side over Eric Berry, and then again, I believe it was Eric Berry in coverage of Gronk on that slot, on that slant route. That right there was vintage Gronk. And you know something, guys? I know there's a lot been speculated about what's going to happen with him this offseason, and I know there's been a lot that's already been said about what's transpired this year, but Gronk is one of those truly unique players that we should appreciate what he is doing on the field. And I thought that this was the best we've seen from him in quite some time.
Field, through all the turmoil of this season, whether it's the offseason or the regular season, injuries, suspensions, etc., what has impressed you most about this Patriots season in general?
You know something, guys? Sports have always been important to me for a lot of reasons. It's my professional endeavor. It's what I live for, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, I think we agree. Everybody involved in this interview right now agrees. But I think that one of the reasons why sports has always been important to me is because I use it for a lot of lessons in life. And I think if you look at the Patriots, are they the most talented team they've ever had? Nah, probably not. Have they had it as easy as, you know, have things gone as planned every Sunday this year? No, probably not either. But the Patriots, I think, have been a real testimony to a team that, it's sports, right? Coaching is ultimately about getting the most out of what you have. And building a roster is ultimately about finding guys that fit. Patriots have done an excellent job of finding that marriage this year, and I think that kind of has defined this season. And we'll see what the end result is, guys. If they win, they don't win. I think there's a lot to be said, though, for how this team has shown, I don't know about in a measurable or maybe incomparable level, but certainly an incredibly high level of mental toughness. And Bill Belichick has kind of become the champion of that phrase in sports. And I think the mental toughness has really been on display for the Patriots this year.
Wow. I like that, Field. I like the life lesson. Though I get a feeling that the Saints fans don't quite see it that way right about now. What did you think of the non-call? What was your thoughts when that happened?
It's a bad call. I mean, I don't have any unique take on what took place on Sunday afternoon, guys.
Yeah.
It hasn't already been said and hashed out 100 times over. You know, the only thing that I have been, and so I want to start by saying I have sympathy for Saints fans. It's an emotional thing, and you root hard, and your team had a great season. I have sympathy for the Saints themselves. They played hard, and there was a lot that they did that went really well this year. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the Saints took a lead. The Saints relinquished that lead. The Saints got the football first in overtime, and Greg Zuerlein made one of the great kicks that you'll ever see. A 57-yard field goal. 57 yards. Remember, if he misses that field goal, which, what are the odds of a guy hitting a 57-yard field goal? 10%?
Yeah.
The 90% likelihood is you're sending the Saints with the football on their own 47-yard line, needing just a field goal to win, and a field goal would probably be a matter of, like, 20 yards of offense gained. I don't want to take away from what, you know, that play meant to the game, but I do want to give a ton of credit to the Rams because they went to New Orleans, and they took it to the Saints. And they could have been out of that one early, and they were not. They continued to fight.
You know, Phil, I'm just curious, because I mean, nobody really knows football more than you. Do you think, I don't know if I've asked you this, do you think you would make a good referee if you had to be one?
No, I'd make a terrible referee because I would never be one. I've actually, I remember I was an official for like a lacrosse camp back when I was in college.
Wow.
And I remember we all, it was, you know, all the members of our team had to do it. And it was like the most miserable experience. It was terrible. You're sitting there, you're just like, why would anybody ever volunteer doing this? It is just not worth it.
How funny.
So, Field, if penalties become reviewable, and I'm kind of for that, especially, obviously the timing is right after what we saw last Sunday, but what could that look like?
I think it's pretty simple, guys. Here's the thing. If penalties are not subjective, they are not. I mean, obviously, ref has to make a determination on every play, and there are those who say, well, you know, there could be holding called on every play. But when penalties are thrown, it's an objective decision by the referee, and they outline very specifically, whether it's defensive pass interference, offensive holding, you name it. The violation is spelled out, and you are refereeing upon the various bylaws, whether it's, you know, pass interference. It's like, you know, do you hook the defender? Do you not make contact or, you know, not make you know, vision of the ball to the quarterback. Like, there are various things a ref is looking for. I think how it works out is this. You still get two challenges. If you get both of them right, you get a third. And if you have three bad calls that go against you, sorry, guys, tough luck. Like, that happens pretty infrequently, right? Especially with reviews in the final 2 minutes being subject to an official anyways, and all scoring plays and being challenged as it is. Like, I think that, for the most part, that would, I don't know about solve everything, but it would take away a lot of the angst.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, thanks to the Automax Group with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game. Field, I guess I have a question along the line of Rich's question. Would you think that, now we're just having fun, like, bar discussion about this, but do you think that that a coach would have to tell the referee, hey, we are challenging that specific player committed an infraction? Or could they just look at it and say, hey, there was no pass interference there, but hey, there was illegal contact on the other side of the field, so we're going to give you that one instead?
Right. I think what it would have to be would be that you have to challenge, if a flag is thrown, you have to challenge that specific penalty. Hey, 24 was called for pass interference. We are contending, or, you know, in that case, what you would say is, hey, we are throwing a flag, or we are challenging that player 23, Nick L. Roby Coleman, did commit a penalty. You have to be very specific here because you could find a penalty on every play, I assume, right?
Yeah.
And, not to be, guys, I don't want to just make this about the officials, but, I think part of, I thought that penalty was sort of the grand poobah of bad calls over the weekend, guys, but I think the NFL just has an inconsistency issue with pass interference. I mean, I thought there was a play, and I'm trying to think what I think it might have been on the Chiefs' first or second drive of the game. There was a critical moment. It was a 3rd and 10. The Patriots got off the field, and they flagged, I don't know who it was, but it was like the ball was thrown 50 yards down the field to Tyreek Hill, but somebody breathed on Sammy Watkins on the opposite side of the play. It was totally yeah. inconsequential, and that's a flag. I thought that there were other calls that could have loomed larger if they had impacted the game more. So I think that it's not just the point of emphasis of making pass interference reviewable. It's also it's going over the procedures again and again and again with these referees, because I tell you guys, I do think there is a consistency issue. I think that certain players are also officiated differently, right? I mean, and I know we talked about this more in previous years, but like there are plays where I'm thinking to myself, why is Gronk is getting manhandled and nothing being thrown? So I think the NFL has a lot of areas to address as it pertains to that specific flag.
Field, one of the things I'm most interested in the Super Bowl is how Wade Phillips, a guy who's had defenses that have played well against Tom Brady, what he does against the Patriots. I look back at the 2016 AFC title game where the Broncos, led by Wade Phillips' defense, beat Tom Brady. They hit him a lot. They stopped the run. I think that's the same game plan they have to stop here. The Patriots have been running over everybody in these playoffs. I think if they can limit them like they've limited Ezekiel Elliott and Alvin Kamara, I think that's where the Rams' best chance is. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that ultimately it's about disrupting the play of the offensive line, which in turn obviously disrupts the play of Tom Brady. But Brady has been sacked the same number of times this playoffs as all of us have been sacked so far this playoffs. Zero. It hasn't happened. And, the Rams typically, or Wade Phillips, I should say, typically, doesn't throw a bunch of different wrinkles in week to week. I mean, that's not to say that the game plan is the same, but it's kind of Seattle-like when Seattle Seahawks were really in their heyday of the Legion of Boom, is that, like, we do what we do, we just do it better than you're able to counter it with, right? But this past week against the Saints, I thought we saw some different nuances that really helped the Rams, and it's an unbelievably talented defense. Obviously, the top-line talent is probably as good as there is in the NFL, right? I mean, like, how many teams have a top six on defense that is better than Aaron Donald, Ndamukong Suh, Dante Fowler, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, LaMarcus Joyner, when they're playing their best football, right? Like, some of those guys have been up and down this year, and obviously the answer is there are a few, right? Like,
right.
Chicago and probably Minnesota and a couple others. But still, it's a really talented defense. It's going to be a tremendous test for the Patriots. This is going to be, I know that Vegas has it as a near pick'em. This game should be really competitive.
Field, I can't believe I even have to ask you, is Todd Gurley going to have a bigger role? What's going on with him? What's happening there?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer, guys, because Sean McVay doesn't really mess around with the information on injuries, right? Like, he comes out and says, hey, we think this guy's going to miss X amount of time. He's pretty transparent early on in the week about a player's availability for the upcoming week ahead. So when he says Todd Gurley is healthy, I've learned to take Sean McVay at face value with his injury comments. So when he says, hey, Todd Gurley's healthy, my retort is, okay, fine. If Todd Gurley's healthy, then I'm going to trust Sean McVay and just say that I don't know that it's a performance thing, guys. Like, I really do believe that what we saw 2 weeks ago against Dallas is more Todd Gurley than what we saw this past week against New Orleans. I just think that, sometimes Superman leaves his cape at home, and that was the case for Todd Gurley this past weekend, who, to me, still is one of the X-factors and one of the most important players in the Super Bowl.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, Field, without the answer being the halftime show or the commercials, what's the thing you think everybody's going to remember or at least be talking about on Monday?
I think that ultimately the narrative will sort of pivot one way or the other, right? Because it's either, Brady and Belichick win another and no one's going away anytime soon and they are, further cementing their status as the greatest of all time, or it's, hey, this is the start of Sean McVay's quest to become one of the greatest head coaches in NFL history. I think that's, And not that there's going to, you know, certainly be plenty of player storylines as well. But I think that those are sort of the maybe overarching bigger picture stories that people will be focusing on depending on the result.
He's Field Yates. He's awesome. Our ESPN NFL insider. Have a great time at the Super Bowl. When you look up Brady, have Brady pay for dinner. Would you please? It's on him.
All right. I'm writing that down.
That's news to him and Brady.
I love it. Field, thanks a lot. Have a good time. We'll speak to you later on.
All right, guys. Take care.